This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 329, brought to you by Avengers vs. X-Men from Marvel Comics C2E2 and the Summit City Comic Con. I've been hurt before you, but I won't be hurt again. If there's got to be a change in me, it's gonna start with you, my friend. Don't try to change my mind, you see, just a waste of time. Hi, welcome to iFanboy.com, Pick of the Week podcast, episode 329. My name is Ryan Haupt, and I'm here with Mike the Mouth Romo.
Hello.
Allie the Brains Colicchio.
Bonjour.
And Jim the Face Muchkrowski.
Sorry, everybody.
This is our annual staff writer show. Josh, Ron, and Connor are kicking back for a much-needed break, but don't worry, they'll be back next week.
At iFanboy.com, we like comics, we read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of the guys not on the show currently picks the best one and writes about it on the website, and then we all get to talk about it on the podcast along with various other topics of interest.
Now this is kind of nice. This week we're also pleased to pass along some very special news for a tried and true member of the iFanboy community. I say iFan base. Staff Sergeant Jonathan Castillo is expecting a baby. Well, his wife Diamond is anyway. And Mrs. Castillo has tasked us with letting him know the gender of their new addition, which we'll be revealing at the end of the show. Spoilers!
Speaking of which, before we get to the show, a quick reminder slash warning. This is a review show, everybody, and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you are worried about spoilers, you have made a huge mistake clicking on this. This week, Connor had the pick, but he is not here.
And what is that pick?
As a matter of fact, it turns out to be Avengers versus X-Men number one.
Well,
by Brian Michael Bendis and John Romita Jr.
With a cover that was a very nice and exciting cover.
So, yeah. is that where you stopped, Mike? I think the biggest shock for me was the opening page where it gives you the breakdown of the cast.
I know.
And right. There's four rows of Avengers, and there's like five X-Men.
The odds are stacked, guys.
I mean, it's just who appeared in the issue, and you know there was the whole like the Avengers boom on the helicarrier thingy. Mm-hmm.
You guys always sort of laugh whenever you see the Avengers, and then there's Daredevil. Like, he's always, don't you have something to do in New York? Don't you have a case? I just feel I love that he's in the Avengers when they're in New York, but anytime he's out, like, outside of New York, I'm like, this ain't right.
It's just,
There's a scene in New York.
No, but yes. He jumps off the helicarrier.
There's a scene in this week's Hulk, actually, where Daredevil is training with Iron Man, and it really makes you sort of ponder,
those guys have nothing in common. Right. They would never hang out.
So, guys, all right, so I'm the big sad nerd. When you guys saw the AR icon on the pages...
Oh, my God, thank you, Mike.
I literally thought it was like, okay, so Marvel's got a new colorist, And part of the deal is that whenever they use this color, it's on that page, they have to copyright it with the AR. And it's like, man, the business is getting
awesome. I actually tweeted out as I was in the middle of it because I found it very distracting.
Yeah.
And so I tweeted out in the middle. I'm like, does anybody else have this? Is this like a weird print thingy? And someone's like, no, it's the app. And when you get to the last page, you find out what it's for.
See, I downloaded it, and the digital version either doesn't have this or I was completely oblivious to it.
It probably doesn't have it. I wouldn't
be
surprised.
It's pretty glaring. It's pretty glaring.
Now, bear in mind, I'm very stupid.
Well,
so
I mean,
it's possible that I just looked right past it.
You couldn't be as stupid as some of the – if you actually used the app, which I got to tell you was like walking a tightrope to get this thing aimed correctly.
Uh-huh.
So have you guys tried it out? Have you guys used the app?
No, I'm not.
I still don't even know what it is.
What it does is in an augmented reality that you look at the page and then and you sort of aim it and hold it and hold your breath. It's like tuning in an old TV. You put it in the exact right angle and then suddenly you see the page animate on the phone. And the very first page with the big, you know, what should be a very dramatic phoenix sort of coming from, you know, the ashes or whatever, big, big double page spreads. You're like, okay. And then this guy, the editor, walks on it and starts explaining to you, I think it's Axel Alonso. He walks in and sort of explains to you, hey, we're doing this augmented reality thing. So I felt it really kind of let out some of the dramatic tension because throughout the comic, you're constantly wondering what the AR was. And I found it extremely distracting. But let's talk about the story. This is your classic first issue. And, anybody want to run it down a little bit?
So does anybody?
There's a plane that crashes, and then there's Nova and a pile of Iron Man and Protector are bickering for some reason that's not entirely apparent based on their previous characterizations. And
so you guys are just going to be bitchy about this for 10
minutes.
No,
I'm not being bitchy. The thing I really want to talk about is why is Cyclops beating up a teenage girl for like 3 pages?
Because she's the future of mutant kind.
She's the future of mutant kind. I have to say, I did have a little bit of I'm like, dude, she's been trained by Cable since she was like a toddler. Literally since she was a toddler. I think she's okay. But it's Cyclops, and he needs to make sure that she was trained properly.
What does Marvel have against the Chrysler Building? I'm sorry. I used to live in New York, and now is in continuity. The Chrysler Building is no longer there.
That had one of my favorite moments in it, where Spider-Man catches all the Chrysler Building victims in his web, and one of them says, "All right, that's it. I'm done. I'm moving."
They should have a comic just about that family.
Yes.
So the plot is basically Nova comes crashing down to Earth. He warns about the Phoenix forces coming all back up into the Earth. And I guess, last time I saw this girl, she was a little baby. We assume that the Phoenix energy is coming back to Hope. And X-Men are like, yo, this is my problem. The Avengers are like, no, it's our problem. And then someone offstage goes, fight!
Cyclops is not even willing to admit that it's a problem so much. He thinks that it might be the solution.
I like that I might be team X-Men in this, not gonna lie. I like that he realizes that yes, as much of this being the Phoenix Force being a force of destruction, it's also rebirth. That's kind of what the whole thing is about. And you know, they've been wiped down since the whole no more mutants thingy. So I can see where Sykes coming from, thinking that it could be a chance for, you know, mutant kind to come back from the 198 that they are.
I would like him to walk me through that plan.
Well, Psyche always has a plan. There's a plan.
Step one, Phoenix is powerful. Step three, profit.
32 sub-plans underneath it.
Right.
Just in case. You know, he needs to blast Cap with his...
Namor seduces the Phoenix Force.
Right.
And then...
I'm surprised that hasn't... The only thing that I thought was kind of weird was they're like, oh, the Phoenix... Like, the way they were talking about Jean and the Phoenix Force, it's like, you remember she came back and then there was the whole thing with Grant Morrison and then she died?
Right.
It felt very Dark Phoenix-y Phoenix Force.
Although I did like the idea that the president has been briefed on the Phoenix Force and has been waiting for this for, you know, 25 years or whatever. I also Yes, exactly. You wanted us to mention if we came across anything send after the scroll. Well, yeah. Yeah, I did. since I almost, you know, was replaced by an alien shapeshifter. But I thought this was very accessible. It was very user-friendly. At the same time, there were a couple of things I felt like I was supposed to know that I didn't know. For example, I would swear the last time I saw Nova anywhere, he was dying.
I don't think this is Rich Rider. I think it's just a Nova.
Sorry. If you read the Infinite Comics thing, which we'll talk about later, I guess, shortly, he's a big Cardinals fan. He's a big fan of his dad. Like, it didn't seem like the Nova that I had known, although it did seem like a, you know, American Earthling. I have no idea who this guy is. Also, I would swear I have read something about Hope having the Phoenix Force prior to now, but I can't remember where. And
I don't think she has. This is the first actual real flare-up. Hope is probably one of my favorite X-Men Marvel characters right now. There's been glimpses and glimmers, and she knows what the Phoenix Force is, sort of. But this is the first time, like, when, you know, Psyche, you know, kicks her in the stomach for, like, the third time.
Right.
And she goes all ballistic. That's the first time we've ever actually seen, like, a full-on flare. They play a lot with, like, the flames in the eyes.
Yeah.
But for the most part, she's just been a power mimic. But she also has this power where she can kind of, like, calm mutants who are freaking the hell out down.
Right.
They could have used that on the second or third page when Cyclops was kicking her repeatedly.
When Magneto was all, Scott, you sound like I used to sound.
That's right.
What do you guys think of the art?
I think Romita is much better with action than he is with talking heads. Like, yes. And I've always felt that about him, that, you know, whether it's Spider-Man swinging through New York or, you know, big, huge, bloody action sequences and Kick-Ass. Like, I think he works much better with movement and action than he does with people talking to each other. But he's got a great sense of movement, and the way he draws the Phoenix Force as like this giant fireball is really cool.
I mean nothing stuck out to me about the art as problematic, although ever since Romita has been doing Bendis's Avengers, he's had a very troubling relationship with women's hair.
Yeah,
like Spider-Woman,
draws it like it's 1985.
Spider-Woman in particular is in need of an extreme makeover.
So what do you guys think? Are you guys going to stick with it?
Sure.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's
with all of them or just the main book?
Well, what are you asking?
Do you want to mortgage your house or do you just want to buy the comic?
I'm going to continue to buy all of the books I buy already.
Yeah.
And I pre-ordered Avengers versus X-Men Versus, which is the dumbest name of a thing in a long, long time. I pre-ordered it because it was 75 cents an issue if you pre-ordered it. So that's the Who Would Win in a Fight comic with, you know, Iron Man versus Magneto, which I can tell you how that's going to end up right away.
Maybe he has a plastic suit.
maybe he does. But yeah, I'm not going out of my way to buy anything new, but I'm going to keep buying everything I'm buying, and I'm going to keep buying this book until, you know, it's over.
We were talking about it earlier. It was kind of like you guys were talking about how Swamp Thing number 8 and Animal number 8 were kind of crossing over. Was it just sort of like they were in the same neighborhood, or did you guys see Animal Man in one of the very scary panels in Swamp Thing number 8, or is it just that the same story point is happening?
I think it's the same story points. In Animal Man, I feel like they reference Alec Holland, so there's more of a reference there, but they don't talk about the Red or Buddy or even Little Wing, who has a name that's not Little Wing, in Swamp Thing.
Do you read both of them, or do you just read one?
I read both of them, and I read both of them back-to-back all the time.
Uh-huh.
I think I like Swamp Thing a little bit better. I'm not sure. I usually read Swamp Thing first, and then I'll read Animal Man.
I've stuck with Swamp Thing this whole time. When the new 52 launched, I tried Animal Man number 1, and I didn't try number 2. So I'm curious to see how this is going to play out if I continue to not buy Animal Man. I'm trying to kind of resist the crossovers.
They seem pretty separate. Yeah, they seem like they're pretty individual, but in the same universe, which is kind of nice. This month's Animal Man, you know, I still think that Travel Foreman is doing some great work for Jeff Lemire, and it sort of continues with basically Buddy and his family on this road trip, having a really sort of rotten road trip, and sort of the power of the red sort of following them. And is anybody else reading this? Because it's been getting pretty good with his daughter starting to get the new powers. And there's a really great scene where his daughter gets mauled by all these wild animals, and Buddy goes absolutely crazy. And I got to tell you, and it's been really
although funny. The stuff that happens with the daughter is totally screwed up.
Yeah, she totally gets mauled, and as she's getting mauled, she sort of goes into the body of another beast and grows back into herself.
And then grows back into herself. Uh-huh. She's like, little Mr. Fox totally helped me out. Also, I do have to say, one of the things I love about this book, and I think my cat actually loves about this book, is that there's a talking cat that hangs out with them. That
you
is like
cat.
Ignatius.
Yes.
AKA Sox.
Sox. Sox the cat is like the ambassador diplomat that's sent from the Red to kind of guide them and help them out. And it's this talking cat, which I totally love. And I'm totally not making this up. I was reading this comic this afternoon. My cat jumped up on my lap and started sniffing around the pages when the cat was on the page.
They're so like us.
They are.
In that they are awful. But wasn't Sox the name of the Clinton's cat?
I think so.
Is this the same guy?
Very meta right now.
I don't know. No, all yeah. cats are named Sox.
Didn't mean to stump everyone.
My cat is named Sox.
May not have made it to the best panels of the week, but at one point, Buddy kicks the head off a rabbit.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, that I'll read it now. I'll go download it all.
And it makes been like one of those Marvel AR things on that one, so you could see the actual rabbit head come at you in 3D.
That would have been cool. So I think I'm not sure where the crossover. I mean, the crossover doesn't feel like it's happened yet. It just feels like it's building to it. And both these issues. Animal Man and Swamp Thing ended on cliffhangers where the protagonist seems to be in dire straits, which is a pretty common, common cliffhanger to have. But in these books, they've been a bit more of a slow burn. So this really feels like the first time Swamp Thing has really been in any danger, right. and Animal Man is finally realizing the stakes a little bit, it seems like. And so I think the next issue will really be where it comes together. And I imagine we'll have a very classic superhero fisticuffs, not understanding each other's
right.
We're almost seeing a new side of both characters. We see a much more deliberate Animal Man, and then when we go over to Swamp Thing, we see him really committing to being Swamp Thing. And
I was going to say, Alec Holland hasn't even been Swamp Thing until like the last issue, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, like last issue was like the big transformation issue, and you didn't still really see him.
You saw
as...
like an arm and a wing, and yeah,
right. But, I mean, yeah,
even just seeing a wing is a new thing for Swamp Thing.
What do you think about his new look?
He makes an entrance. Like when he made the entrance in this issue, that was boom.
There's a lot of non swampy things to the new Swamp Thing. He's got feathers and he's got elk horns, and he seems just much more superhero-y than sort of the shambling mound man thing that I...
Yeah, it's definitely a streamlined design. But, I mean, it also feels very fluid. Like, he changes his shape as he goes into battle and things like that. So I imagine, you know, I'm totally fine with having battle mode Swamp Thing and forest mode Swamp Thing. Like, let's go the whole thing.
He looked more animalistic than plant-like.
Yep. But knowing
you know,
that,
like with
Snyder
the antlers and the wings, it felt very animalistic as opposed to that's a plant. I mean, it's still plant like. I mean, it's very leafy wings, and the horns are very like gnarled wood. But he looks more like something out of Animal Man. Which
I liked the corkscrew and the scissors, but I thought that the nail clippers were excessive.
Are you guys all reading Chew, which is still, for my money, one of the most consistently funny and artistically creative books on the market?
Yes. I can't imagine stopping.
I like every once in a while going through and really paying attention to the backgrounds and the
songs. Oh, it's glorious.
Because they're hilarious. And there's one scene in this issue of Chew where they're in a theater section. And up in the balcony is very clearly drawn not only Waldorf and Statler from...
Oh, yeah, Jay and Silent Bob.
But Silent Bob.
That's right.
And it just ended up... I'm like, yes, it's the ultimate peanut gallery.
with some sort of Greedo shot first t-shirt on or something like that. Yeah.
If
he starts to do a double page spread with like a Where's Waldo layout on it, you could drink it in for the rest of the afternoon and, you know, get your money's worth out of a single page.
Well, and there's just such an amazing, and I mean, the art is, you know, Rob Guillory's art is fantastic. And John Layman's story is at once all over the place, but at the same time, so obviously planned out that it just, there's such a great rhythm to this book. Like every time, you know, they reintroduce the character so often, but it's always done in a slightly twisted way. So it's never dull. It's always fresh. And it's just,
and
so
occasionally
fun.
It will cut to issue 60 for a panel.
Yes. That was hilarious.
Favorite. Hate that was you, favorite. So this wrapped up this story, which, you know, I had actually kind of paused a bit and I had kind of forgotten it, but we have basically Tony's been missing for a while. He's been kidnapped by this guy who wants to write a book about the sexual exploits of baseball players. Right. And they've added the CBOPath. That's how you say it. Right. I remember originally it was to get the story of the food that he had eaten, but now it seems like they're able to take on the powers, if there are powers, of the people if they eat the person. Is that right?
No, that's his daughter is able to do that. But she's because more advanced.
But he came up with it though because he was able to throw that baseball at the end.
Yeah.
His daughter's better at it.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But I think the other thing
he used it to untie the knots, and he did other things with it. Because there was one of the baseball players was into being tied up, so from eating his flesh, Tony was able to give the author, like, oh, this guy's into being tied up, but he also just was able to learn how to untie his own knots that he was being tied up.
I feel like if someone is hearing about this having never read the book, what we are doing right now sounds a lot like gibberish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a function of the book because it's very difficult to explain in, you know, there's no elevator pitch for Chew other than the fact that Tony Chew is a detective who has the ability to eat a piece of food and know its entire history.
Well, eat a piece of anything.
Yes, and know its entire history.
Because that's kind of the whole thing that they're playing with here. Because normally now it's this, food, this, but he's eating...
This douchebag has kidnapped him and exhumed the corpses of all these famous baseball players, and now he's force-feeding them to Tony so that Tony can experience their entire lives and... figure out the idea being that he can figure out all their peccadillos, but as it turns out, it gives him the power to, you know, whip a baseball at 100 miles an hour, among other things, which ends up saving the bacon. But in the meantime, you've got Marilyn Monroe impersonators and Elvis impersonators and Civil War reenactors and
the whole thing is Tony's- they're auctioning Tony for his talents off. So
right.
Like, there's a bunch of like, you know, Elvis impersonators who want to learn more about Elvis and Marilyn,
right.
You know, fanatics and, you know, neo-Nazis, and everyone wants to learn all about these dead people.
We've also got Always. Tony's ex-partner sleeping with his boss again. A different boss, but...
Yes.
How... That was an opening splash page that you do not normally see.
Rob Guillory tweeted it on like Tuesday that, you know, it was the most disgusting thing he'd ever drawn. So I tried to be prepared for it, but I just couldn't. It was too much.
I had seen it, but I did not know that that was the opening. That's a cool opening.
You know, buxom septuagenarian in a corset.
Well, I did have to say though, there was part of me that I was like, kind of like, this is fantastic.
If you were blind, you wouldn't have had to see it and then you would have been spared.
And speaking of blind, we have to talk about Daredevil 10.1.
What?
Who?
Best in the biz, Mike Romo.
It's been a while, guys. So Daredevil. So it's weird that they do a .1 issue of a book that I would argue that if you're not reading this book, then why are you reading comics? For me,
yeah. At the same time, right. Mike, this is the first .1 issue where the first page actually explains who the character is and what his deal is. So it might be the first successful .1 issue so right. far.
Percentage-wise, yeah. How many .1 issues have actually been a good jumping on point? I'd put it at about 35.
I feel like there was that one Wolverine one where he was
the birthday party. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that one, but it didn't really have anything to do with anything. This one really, actually, to Ryan's point, it explained who he was. It showed that he had a job. It showed that people kind of knew that he was Daredevil.
And it showed that he was a lawyer, and that, and now we're getting used to this art where we're really able to sort of visualize his powers, which is really exciting. It's a really great introductory book, but it didn't really set it. Just for me, I guess this is what it does. It's a one and done story that gets people excited about the character.
I feel like this series of all of them didn't need a point one because every issue is like this. One of the things that I absolutely adore about this book, aside from the fact that it's swashbuckling adventure and I love that, is it's so accessible. Like, you can just pick it up. It doesn't matter where you are. You can pick it up. There's a lot of one and dones or two part stories that you can easily figure out what's going on early enough. This is the comic that I want to give to everybody that I know that doesn't read comics. Because
you know what? Actually, Allie and I have a friend who picked up the previous issue of Daredevil and liked it more than this one. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And it was – she found it to be she – note the pronoun, the elusive female comic reader. She read Daredevil 10 and found it infinitely more enjoyable, infinitely more accessible, even though it was the end of an arc. She hopped right on board and loved every minute of it. And that's the way Daredevil is now. It's no coincidence that it's killing the Eisner nominations. I don't know if you saw those this week, but it's just mopping the floor with everything else. And it's not an accident. It's just that good.
Oh, actually, I was going to comment on the art just because I like Rivera and Martine a lot. I mean, I'm just very particular when it comes to art, and I just there were some panels that I just didn't really look that good. I felt, to me, Coy was trying to mimic what those guys were doing, which I always think is a bad idea. And it just didn't seem, for me, it just seemed too sketchy and not as clean and not as fun, really. When there's too many lines, I think the too much detail makes it sort of grounds it and it just didn't feel like the modern Daredevil book that I had been used to.
So you want to say, be yourself, Coy fam.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
This was Remember, fine, Mike. You're being way too over.
Mike
I'm kind of in the middle here because I did think it was fantastic, but it did feel like it wasn't quite – I felt like it might have been like Rivera or Martine on a bad day.
There's like there's one page
– because it wasn't quite – all there, but it was still fantastic. It was still unbelievable.
I'd like to see you grumpy bastards draw a Daredevil page.
It will be all stick figures.
I'm with you. Exactly. I'm with you, Jim. Well, there's the scene where Matt's in the holding cell with the pyro guy. I don't remember his name. And the guy, you know, finally makes a move on Murdoch and slams his head down on the table. And he's basically saying he's going to use Murdoch as a hostage shield to get out of the prison. And he asks, you know, like, what are you scared? And when he asks that, you see just the hint of a smile on Murdoch's face. And then
the way Murdoch smiles in this series consistently is just fantastic. And I do have to say,
he was not smiling during the Brubaker and Bendis period.
No,
sir.
The bad guy dialogue at the end when like all five evil crime groups are getting together to talk about how they're going to take down Daredevil is just brilliant. I love when bad guys kind of banter back and forth because they can't stand each other, and this was top notch.
Unfortunately, that one guy's skull wasn't quite invincible enough to withstand the end of the issue.
Speaking of invincible,
how does that keep happening?
But it sounds like a lot of things are happening in Invincible. Is it a whole new paradigm now?
No, not quite yet. It's building. It's building to a new paradigm. There's Black Invincible running around doing his thing. He's not quite as fast as Mark. So Eve is annoyed, and there's Dinosaurus fighting Viltrumites and Alan the Alien popping in to see old friends. Like, it's a great Invincible issue where there are a million threads going on all at once, but it's really well balanced, and it starts at one point and ends at another point, and stuff happens in between, and it's just a satisfying read in a single issue, and it'll probably go even better in the trade.
Well, okay.
Awesome sauce.
So I hear something's coming to Chicago.
C2E2 is coming to Chicago, and I'm coming to Chicago next weekend, April 13th to 15th at McCormick Place. There are going to be tons of comics guests there, including Axel Alonso, Joe Quesada, Dan Slott, the nicest guy in comics, Jason Aaron, the best beard in comics, Scott Snyder, Rick Remender, Neil Adams, Tim Seal, Amanda Connor, Ryan Stegman, Sean Murphy, so many people! And then there are a bunch of non-comics people, like John Cusack will be there. I will give him my heart. He will give me a pen. Anthony Daniels, C-3PO himself. Steve Yeun from The Walking Dead. The talented and sexy John Barrowman from Torchwood and Doctor Who. This year they've got expanded free shuttle service to get you to the show faster and easier if you're not staying down there. There's a mobile app that includes everything from programming and maps. Kids under 12 get in for free on Sunday. Tickets are $50 for the weekend in advance and $65 at the door. And you can go to c2e2.com to order tickets and find out more information.
You know what, iFanboy, we love to talk about comics. And one of the comics that we love to talk about is Action Comics. And I get the
Do we love to talk about Action Comics?
I like talking about Action Comics. I'm not going to talk about the new logo, but the number 8 just came out. Are you guys reading this book?
Yeah,
I bailed as of this issue.
I kind of bailed an issue or two ago.
You know,
I don't blame you.
Yeah, I don't blame you either. And it really pains me to say this.
It's been really hard.
Why did you guys?
I really liked it in the beginning. Like, the first issue I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
The second issue I thought was really good. And then I have no idea what happened because I didn't remember anything after that.
I was making my pull list this week, and I was reading the solicitation copy for this week's issue, and they talked about it being the culmination of the first storyline. And I was like, has this been a storyline? And I realized, you know, I was all on board for the blue jeans and work boots Superman with the dish towel around his neck. And I thought, like,
blanket.
And let me make one thing clear. I hate Superman so much. He is awful.
Why are you talking right
he
now?
He is the worst. He is the worst. But Grant Morrison did such a cool thing with him as, like, teenage Bruce Springsteen superpower man with issue number 1 that I was blown away when I was reviewing the new 52 as quote unquote the Marvel guy. So I've been reading it this whole time, but it didn't live up to the promise of the first issue. It's been so disjointed, and it wasn't any of the things that issue number 1 suggested it was going to be.
Right.
And I loved number 1, and it's just been exponentially dropping off since then.
So, what ended up happening was issue 1 was all about, you know, jeans and t-shirts, Superman, but the storyline itself really was just about how did Superman get a costume that wasn't jeans and a t-shirt when jeans and a t-shirt was the draw for a lot of people.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And this is where that transition actually seemed to happen. We're in Brainiac's little ship up top, and there's other robot thing. I actually got very confused as to who he was fighting in this issue. I really liked Rex Morales, and I guess I don't. I thought there were some significant storytelling things, and Morrison has been doing this thing where just random word bubbles happen, where it's just
I
never knew who was talking, and then there's like robot sounding words, and then there's like alien sounding words. And so at the end of the day, you know, Metropolis was in one of those glass collector's jars. The part where Lois and Lex were. And he basically saves the day. And in doing so, he comes to terms with a new costume. And there's the most awkward, awful thing that happens to the art here at the end of it, it's a new art. These people have the biggest teeth. Tom Cruise has the same thing with the front teeth, where there's no gap between the two. And there's a point where Superman he's about to leap into the air, and he looks back like he's just stolen some candy from a store, and then leaps into the air, and again the hugest 3D face pops right out. I feel assaulted by his teeth. They're super teeth, and it was really one of those things. And I will say, guys, I thought
this issue felt rushed. I don't know who the major players are. I felt like, oh my goodness, it's 8 issues already. Well, I guess we got to make sure he's got the costume. He works at Daily Planet, and Superman has somewhere to go to be alone. And I felt like this is very much by the numbers, and we'll talk about it later. But really, kind of a yes, there was a lot of action, so I guess it was an action comic. But I felt like this was a stumbling thing, and we were supposed to be all up at arms with this big, rich, white-haired guy, and now we're supposed to be relieved that he's no longer going to be in power. And I just thought it was a mess. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, Mike, are you sticking with this, Mike? I mean, I know you're the Superman guy. So
I'll read the next. The thing is, if I don't read this, I don't read any Superman. So, guys, I have an admission to make. I've fallen off the wagon, and that wagon's name is Wolverine and the X-Men. I have.
Why? What is wrong with you, Mike?
You know,
fun. So Wolverine and the X-Men, because Mike wanted to get caught up, is we kind of open with Kid Kildare, who is now the head of the Hellfire Club, which I love that the Hellfire Club is now like 10-year-olds.
I thought I was going to hate this.
And he's working with Sabretooth to figure out how to take down Wolverine and the X-Men, because at 12, this is the thing. He's the maniacal, evil bad guy, and he needs to take down the X-Men. That's all he cares about. And so he's hired Sabretooth to help him do this. And the lesson that he teaches the kid very early on is, you know, don't go for the limbs, don't go for the head, go for the heart.
Well, I think you're kind of skipping the big part of this issue was that Beast is also a badass. Wolverine is not the only badass.
I was getting to that.
You were taking too long. I want to talk about Beast.
I'm sorry. So they go after Beast because Beast is the heart of the X-Men, and Beast is a badass. So go ahead, Ryan.
No, that's the whole point, is that both in Secret Avengers and in Wolverine and the X-Men, Beast can get like ripped to shreds and still be a hilarious, awesome badass and jumps into space without helmets because he's Beast. Like, what more do you need? Go read Wolverine and the X-Men. Stop.
So, yes, basically the way they get Beast into space is his girlfriend is Abigail Brand, who is the head of S.W.O.R.D., who I love.
Yes.
And so he needs to go up to S.W.O.R.D. to get something, and she's under attack, and Beast goes all awesome, badass.
Speaking of
this comic is
swords,
so much fun.
He kicks people in the skull.
I wish he wasn't a blue lion, but he is pretty great.
Speaking of kicking people in the skull, Skull Kickers number 13 came out. And guys, I picked it up. I started reading it with this issue, this series. I keep wanting to do it. And
you started with number 13?
It's a lucky number, right? It actually, I'll go pick up a trade or something. And this is a pretty fun
just
book.
Jump in.
These characters seem pretty fun. Are you guys regular readers of this?
I have.
No, but I read this. I read a few, but I read this one as well.
Yeah, I've been on board since the beginning.
As someone who's, so tell us why you like this book and how this just jumping on point fared, if it's a good jumping on point or not.
I love Skull Kickers because it's a sort of book that I should hate. It is everything that I don't like about fantasy and just in general. I'm not a fantasy fan, but this book takes all of the conventions and all of the things that like a J.R.R. Tolkien or a George R.R.R. Martin or anybody who uses too many initials will look at with a straight dour face and paints a smile on it. Like the two main characters, essentially they've never said what their names are. There's a bald guy and a bearded guy who's a dwarf, and they just get into misadventures, and one of them has a gun for some reason, even though it's one of these vaguely sort of dark ages centuries. And they're irreverent, and they poke fun at every convention that you think of when you think of fantasy. And it's fun and it's lighthearted and it's action packed, and it doesn't overthink anything, but it's very clever. And the bottom line is, it's the sort of thing I normally hate, but this I love.
I like the idea that these Baldy and Shorty are go and enter this pirate ship, and this pirate ship, it's all female pirates. I thought that was actually a really fun note, and I thought it set things up in a really great way. And there's that great frame where they're all pointing fingers at them, going, "Men!" He's like, "I'm actually," the dwarf is like, "I'm actually one of you guys. I'm a girl." And he's like, No, you. Our girls have beards. And the bald guy.
Women have beards. Yeah.
Yeah. And the bald guy uses a charcoal brush to paint in his eyebrows for some reason. I got enough out of the characterization and sort of the whimsical way of. It sort of reminded me of Chew in a little bit, the way it does action and the way it uses words to do sound effects. And yes. I had a fun time with that. I don't really know what's going on. This is kind of the jumping on point where it's setting up. The next couple of issues, but I liked it enough. I'll check it out.
You know what? Issue number one was essentially the same as issue number 13 in terms of like what you needed to know. So I wouldn't feel bad if I were you. And I also appreciate the fact that they're taking open submissions for a future issue.
That's great.
Exactly. They basically have said, "Hey, fans, would you like to write an issue of this book? Submit something to us, and we'll use it as long as you sign the disclaimer," which is something that you don't see in your Batman, typically, which I appreciated a great deal.
Hey, guys, it's Josh and Ron.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, we're interrupting our show that we're not in to read a sponsor message.
Yes, you've heard about it, but we want to thank Marvel Comics for sponsoring this episode of the podcast and let you know, if you haven't read the big first issue of the big summer event, check out Avengers vs. X-Men number 1. Written by Brian Michael Bendis with art by John Romita Jr. This is the big summer event, right, Josh?
If you want to read Marvel Comics, you need to hook your train to this bus.
Exactly. And you've heard
this weird bus train hybrid.
You no doubt read Connor's Pick of the Week review of it and heard the guys talking about it on the show earlier. But if you haven't picked it up, you can go pick it up at Marvel.com or on the Marvel, any of the Marvel apps that are out there for iOS and Android.
Get to your shop.
Yeah, go to your local comic store. Yeah.
The shop's going to, I can almost guarantee you that your shop is going to stock this.
Yeah,
book.
Absolutely. Head over to ifn.by/avx. iFanboy. That's one of those shortened links. So that's ifn.by/avxifanboy. And we'll put a link in the show notes. If you haven't read it yet, you click over there and you can find a local comic store or you can read it in your browser. So
yeah,
don't miss out on the big summer event. It's going to reshape the Marvel Universe as we know it.
Plus, they're getting started with the Marvel Infinity. What's that? You need to find out.
Exactly. Infinity comic with this first issue. So check it out. And I guess we'll take you back to the other guys.
All right, fine. Goodbye.
I kind of like this. This is the top 5 picks of the week at the time of this recording. And the number 5 pick of the week is OMAC, number 8 with a 4.9%. Number 4 is The Boys, number 65, 7.5%. I'm amazed they're still publishing that book. Number three, Chomps In at Chew, number 25, 11.5%. Come on, guys. Buy more of the book. Number 2... Swamp Thing number 8 at 16.8%. And number 1, no big surprise, Avengers versus X-Men number 1 with 31.5% of you picking it as the pick of the week.
Okay, so BLK Assassin 106 reviewed Amazing Spider-Man number 683, and he or she gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And when we recorded this, the pick of the week percentage was 2%. The subtitle for this issue should be, "I Love It When a Plan Comes Together." Dan Slott covered pretty much all of the plot points he left in the last issue. Is Spider-Man prejudging Doc Ock's motives? I loved in the beginning of the big time era when Spider-Man led the Avengers, but I was disappointed we didn't get to see Spider-Man really lead them as he went off by himself. In this issue, he's playing chess with Octavius, and Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, and the other Avengers are his pawns, and Spider-Man himself is the king. What's really exciting is that while Spidey thinks he's outsmarting Octavius, old Otto is actually 2 steps ahead of him. This issue is full of great moments and is a fun read. Is anybody reading Amazing Spider-Man?
I am. I'm loving Amazing Spider-Man these days.
Right?
Yeah.
I have been, with the exception of the last couple of issues, Spider-Man does not belong in space. I'm sorry,
is he in space now?
No.
Spider-Man has been in space.
The last arc he was in space, and now
don't let the biased liberal media persuade you otherwise. He has been in space until this last issue, but it's okay because in this issue, Spider-Man punches Al Gore in the face.
Well, K Manifesto also thought that OMAC number 8 was quite satisfying because he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And as Mike mentioned, the pick of the week percentage was 4.9%. And K Manifesto says, OMAC issue 8 was a bittersweet ending to what was an otherwise superb exercise of off-the-wall fun. Anyone previously not reading OMAC could pick up this issue and know, in a nutshell, the story of Kevin Coe and his unwitting journey from man to OMAC. What elevated this issue above the previous 7 was the decision by Dan DiDio and Kevin Giffen to juxtapose Kevin's origin and life story with that of OMAC's final battle against, alongside Brother I. Every word was perfectly chosen in the story, but only bettered by the visuals, in bringing to the reader the internal battle Kevin has fought his entire life, from the smallest details of the mundane office environments at Cadmus Industries to the two-page splash of OMAC-induced destruction. Giffen brought his A-game. As we now know, Giffen's homage to Kirby didn't stop with the art, but is fully realized by ending this series, like the original, at issue 8. As a reader of OMAC, I will miss the monthly mayhem of excitement, but like our hero in the final panel, I too must move forward to find new adventures.
Anyone reading this?
Nope.
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 Senior staff writer Paul Montgomery stepping in here just to say, unlike these Philistines, I read and cherished each and every one of OMAC's 8 issues. And I, EYE, will dearly miss it. Remainder of the show. OMACtivate.
And we've also got the Summit City Comic Con coming up May 12th in Fort Wayne, Indiana at the Grand Wayne Center. It's full of creator and comics-focused show with over 100 creators, including Jeff Darrow, Gabe Hardman, Mike Norton and his Eisner nomination, Tom Scholey, and the adorable Katie Cook will all be in attendance. Admission is only $10, and kids under 12 get in for free. SummitCityComicCon.com for more information and details. And so now is the time for the emails. People write in questions, and they expect Connor or Ron or Josh to answer them, but we're going to answer them because it's sneaky like that. And our first question comes from Phil Askew from Winnipeg in the lovely province of Manitoba in Canada, Great White North. And Phil writes, first off, love the show. Secondly, after reading what will be my last Superman comic for the foreseeable future, I was left thinking, why has DC seemingly gone out of their way to ruin this character so badly? It feels like I started after Geoff Johns' run on Action Comics, and it continued into the New 52 reboot. At this point in time, I'm left wondering if any of you see the light at the end of the tunnel for Superman. Mike.
So I'm just going to take a stab at this because, Phil, I feel you. I got to tell you, I haven't read the Superman title except for the first issue since the reboot. And as you could tell from our chatter earlier with Action Comics, I felt great pain even reading that. And I think it's one of those things where I've really become kind of philosophical about it, where maybe I just need to take a step back and just enjoy the memories I have of Superman for a while. Because, like, when I look at what's going on with it, it's going to be this way for a while. He's going to have a little collar. He's going to be kind of a jerk. And there's going to be all this kind of characterization that really, for me, is really unnatural. And if he keeps smiling the way he's been smiling, I won't be able to sleep at night. And, you know, we always, you know, one of the things that the guys always remind us is that the older comics, they never go away. And that's comics right. As an art form, it ebbs and flows. And that's the great thing about it. It's a conversation that the creators have with the readers. And if enough of us feel this way, we'll just stop buying. And they'll have to go, well, what are we doing wrong? And maybe they'll take a look back when sales were really good, like with the stories that we liked, and go, hey, maybe we should sort of get back to what Superman is all about. Because there's been a lot of chaos for me with Superman. Ryan, are you reading the standalone title? Because I must admit, I stopped reading it because I just found it so irritating.
Yeah, I couldn't get through the first issue. So what I want to say to Phil is that, Phil, go through your bookshelf, make a stack of your Superman continuity, and just decide what you want the continuity of Superman to be. And then when you're done with that, go read this book called It's Superman by Tom DeHaven. Connor did an iFanboy mini on it a while ago, and it's a novel, and it's Superman actually set in the Depression. Ooh. And it's amazing. Yes. I always say it's like John Steinbeck writing Superman. So just go read that. Your faith will be restored and all will be well.
And Phil, I would suggest that your actual problem is that Superman is terrible.
Sad face.
Superman has all of the powers and no weaknesses to speak of, and is always eating white toast with no butter, and is always pure and sweet and salutes the flag, and is the most boring character that has ever been created in popular fiction, and that's why you don't like him.
John writes us, he's John Thrax, the iFanboy. He says, while reading the newest issue of The Flash the other day, I thought to myself, why did I wait to start reading this character? I didn't start reading The Flash, well, Barry Allen to be specific, until Flash Rebirth. Since then, I've been loving it and kicked myself for holding out so long. I think it's possible I think that way just because it's been on a great run with awesome creators since the Rebirth mini. Is there a character that you guys held off reading for a long time, but once you did, you thought to yourself, why did I wait so long? Who wants to go for that?
I was like this with the X-Men, and I completely and totally love them right now. But I had a whole, because they're very intimidating and scary. And so it took me a while. Like, I was reading comics for like 2 or 3 years before I picked up my first X-Men comic, and it was the Astonishing X-Men trades. And then it still took me a while. I didn't start reading Uncanny X-Men proper until Kieran Gillen came on with Matt Fraction. And I started reading around then. And now I'm reading that and Uncanny X-Force and Generation Hope. And I'm totally Team X-Men and AVX.
I don't think I have this mindset. I think I just, if I start reading the character, that was the right time to start reading the character. I never feel like I waited until this moment in time, and it's just like, whatever, I want to read this character now. I don't know. This seems like a very, I don't want to say insignificant to disparage the guy, but it just seems like a non-problem. Like, you find the character when you find them and just enjoy it in that moment.
And the other thing you can always do is you can always go back. I mean, that's the brilliant thing about comics now is there's trades and there's digital and there's so many ways to go back and delve into old comics. Like, I totally can pick up a trade and dig into old Claremont X-Men because it's awesome and crazy. You can definitely pick up like Showcase Flash if you want to get to more of like the Barry Allen stuff and in Crisis on Infinite Earths. And there's so much that you can delve into with comics that, you know, it doesn't matter if you wait too long or if you think you've waited too long and you feel like you've missed cool stuff, you could always go back and find it.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I read all of 52 this year.
Why did you do that?
Because I was trying to catch up and figure out what all the cool kids were doing. And, you know, I heard about the new 52 and I thought, well, maybe I'll get in on the ground floor, ? So, you know, there's never any limit.
Well, fortunately, the iFanboy guys go out of their way to make sure that you are aware of comics that you probably shouldn't miss. Right, Mike?
What happened for me, was that a Q-in?
It was, but I guess I didn't really give
that
you a
chance really,
answer,
no, that so was really good. It's fine. My answer was Scout, so there. Everybody's talking about it, and I started reading Scout. But let's move on, you guys, because one of the things that I also like about this podcast is that there's another podcast that I can listen to. Because I just can't get enough of these guys. I don't know if you guys have been listening to it. It's been fantastic. You should not forget to check out Josh and Andy on iFanboy's Make Comics podcast each Wednesday. It's an expert discussion on producing and promoting your own labor of love. And what other kinds of podcasts are you guys listening to?
I wish there was a science one I could listen to.
I would love – or just kind of, sort of.
Well, what they're talking about is I actually do a podcast, which is called Science, Sort Of. So if you're looking for a podcast that's about all things science, all things that wish they were science, and all things that are sort of science, then this might be the podcast for you. It's me and a couple of my scientist buddies, and we sit around and literally drink a beer and talk about whatever science is interesting to us in that moment. It might be quantum physics. It might be Bigfoot. It doesn't really matter. We just have a lot of fun, and we hope you like it.
I do like it.
Well, thanks, Mike.
Check out iFanboy.com for the Pick of the Week review and more in-depth comic book discussion and all the important news and discussion topics and articles written by all four of us and more people because we're amazingly talented and very witty. And you can go to iFanboy.com/about to see all of the staff on iFanboy and their social network links. And then you can follow us on the Twitters at twitter.com/ifanboy. And if your mom likes the show, she can check us out on the Facebook, because that's where moms are.
That's where moms go.
And you can keep in touch on facebook.com/ifanboy.
In addition, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. No one has emailed me in 3 years. Or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS, which is to say 326-2697, with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, recipes, manifestos, etc.
If you dig us, write a review in iTunes. Or better yet, tell your friends about us, introduce your mom to podcasts, she's on Facebook, and spread the iFan word. The word is spelled iFanboy.
Well, that's it for this week's show, I think. Are we forgetting anything, guys?
Oh, that's right. The big reveal. SSG Castillo, you still awake? Are you here? I am very honored. We are very honored to announce that your new cadet is a bouncing baby iFan boy. It's a boy. Congratulations to you and Diamonds, soldier. That
Yay!
Is awesome.
Woo! Yay, babies.
So until next time, which will probably be a year from now, I'm Mike.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Allie.
I am Jim.
And I'm the internet's Paul Montgomery. See you next time.
Who's that voice? Oh my God.
It's the wizard.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is like you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.